Support for WOSU podcasts comes from listeners. You can give at WOSU.org. Thank you for supporting digital content from WOSU Public Media.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The city of Columbus has launched yet another nationwide search for a police chief. This time, Mayor Andrew Ginther has promised, the next chief will come from outside the force. If that's the case, then Columbus will be competing with other large cities in the search for a new top cop, a reformer, and an era of intense scrutiny in the reckoning with racism. New York Times national criminal justice reporter and editor Shyla Dewan has been covering the issue. We'll post her latest article at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome to the show, Shyla.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Across the U.S., cities are firing their police chiefs and looking for reform-minded replacements. It's kind of an epidemic at this point. It reminds me of a lot of what school districts go through with superintendents, too. What is the triggering event in most of these cases? Is there any common denominator?
I mean, it's usually what you are seeing there in Columbus. There's some precipitating event or events that show really questionable actions by the police. And of course, right now you have extreme sensitivity to that. And just to go back to how you started out, and they're firing their chiefs and looking for reformers. Often the people they are firing are themselves reformers. And that's where you get a really big conundrum that you see going on across the country.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was your article or not, but somebody said that they expected to not last long because they were a reformer, that they were kind of intended to be a shock to the system.
Yeah, I mean, some people do go in with that attitude and, you know, they just know. I mean, this is why police chiefs get paid so much. You know, they know going in and they don't expect to have longevity. Others have a different approach. You know, there's the whole question of whether they come from inside or outside, and it's really complicated.
What do you know about what makes it so difficult to bring in an outsider to a police force?
Well, it's just everything you know about the culture of police forces, right? They are very tradition bound. Many forces have multi-generational families of officers, especially in places like Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston. I don't know about Columbus, but I would guess that you maybe have that there. And so you have a department culture is very strong. And as the chiefs always like to say, you know, culture trumps policy. And so you always have a strong tension and a suspicion of outsiders. Are they going to have our backs? Does this person understand what we face when we're out on the streets every day? And so the chief really has to walk a very delicate line of gaining the trust. I mean, if you think about it, like, you cannot reform an organization that doesn't trust you, but you also are responding to a lack of trust from the public at the same time.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And Mayor Ginther of Columbus has promised that there will be a new chief of police by May. They have embarked on a second nationwide search, this time promising that whoever they hire will be from the outside. My guest right now is Shyla Dewan. She's a New York Times national criminal justice reporter and editor, and she's been just wrote about this kind of
musical chairs.
Thank you. It's exactly it. This musical chairs of police chiefs in the United States right now as cities kind of look for the right fit for them. If you have a question or comment about this, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Coming up, we're going to hear from one of those change makers from Charlottesville, Virginia, the police chief there. And we'll also hear from a consultant who works with cities, not Columbus in this case, but works with cities to find police chiefs. And also we'll hear from one of the members of that community committee that was participated in the last go-round. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So cities are turning to more outside candidates. You just explained why that doesn't necessarily always work. How is it working out right now?
I mean, it really varies so greatly from city to city. Take Baltimore. I have lost count of how many chiefs Baltimore has had since the Freddie Gray incident. And some of them have been from outside. Some of them have been from inside the department. It's just been a very mixed bag there. And they finally persuaded. I mean, it's often like, you know, cities are stealing reformers from other cities. So they finally have the guy from New Orleans who seemed to be finally making headway in New Orleans. Erica Shields just became the police chief in Louisville. That was a very difficult job to fill after the Breonna Taylor event, killing, a very flawed event on the part of the cops there. But Erica Shields, who was regarded in Atlanta for a long time as being a progressive and came from inside the Atlanta department, she has her own baggage now because she left Atlanta after the killing of Rayshard Brooks in a fast food parking lot. So it's like, we have really high expectations of these police chiefs, and they often have an uphill battle in implementing the change that they want to implement.
Is it always a straight line to connect a chief of police with an incident? Or is it how they respond to the incident is what people are paying attention to?
I mean, I think Erica Shields responded very decisively to the incidents that were happening there in Atlanta. And I mean, she even just got, you know, a committee just ruled that she improperly fired officers in Atlanta when they used their tasers. And this is what you see a lot. In fact, it just happened in Columbus, an officer who was fired was reinstated. So a lot of times these chiefs complain that they can't even get rid of the quote unquote bad apples that they don't want to have on their force, that they don't feel are maintaining the proper standards of policing. They try to get rid of them and they get caught in this pretty crazy disciplinary process.
Which involves the police unions.
Which involves the unions and protections that the unions have put in place. And I just want to say that, you know, of course, every employee does deserve a degree of due process. And so often I'm not surprised when they want to go to arbitration. But what is surprising is the number of times the arbitrators say, no, you cannot fire this person.
There's also a role of the unions when it comes to whether or not a chief will come from outside the force. In some cases, the contracts forbid that, right?
I don't know of a contract.
Okay, maybe I'm conflating something then. Okay.
Oh, I think maybe what you're talking about, I think the issue in Columbus has been that they demoted the chief.
Oh, okay.
And they're saying that their contract says if you're going to appoint a deputy chief, they have to come up from the command ranks. So they're basically saying, it's kind of a technicality, but they're saying
you can't
make him a deputy chief.
Okay, I'm probably
but I don't know of
that,
any contract provisions that put limits on who you can hire to be the top dog. That's often, you know, that's a political position.
Now, there was a city, was it Minneapolis, that was going to deconstruct its police force and rebuild it?
I mean, some cities have talked about doing that. It's very hard to do. There was a city in New Jersey that tried to do that. And I mean, but often, I mean, it's a tempting idea because it does enable you to sort of wipe the slate clean with these contractual provisions and kind of start over and say, I've even heard people recently saying we shouldn't even call it a police force. We should call it a police service. So it's like this, very enticing idea of reimagining the whole service and what it could be, you know, what it should do, what it should emphasize, who it should hire, what it should pay, and what those contractual protections should be. But I haven't seen a lot of cities that are actually able to start from scratch and do the whole thing over.
It was the former public safety director in Indianapolis and a former chief of police in Spokane, Washington, who said that reformers brought in from the outside don't expect to last long. I finally caught my way up here, and that they were brought in to shock the system. In his case, he said that the rank and file welcomed the reform, but that the top brass in the department opposed him. That's interesting. I guess possibly because they expected to be next in line instead of an outsider. What do you make of that, Shyla?
I mean, I think that that could be true. You also have to remember that there's often different unions, so that there's like a union for rank and file officers. There are unions for commanders. There's a sergeant's union here in New York City. I mean, it's there are, so all of those unions have different sets of interests. And so, you know, you can see that if a chief comes in and starts saying to the commander level staff, I'm going to hold you accountable for X, Y, and Z, they may buck at that. And a lot of it comes down to relationships as well. So no, they may not be supportive. It just, you know, each department is a little bit different in that regard.
There has been a push as well to diversify police forces around, or police departments, however you want to put it, around the country. Coming up, we're going to be talking to Police Chief Rochelle Brackney from the Charlottesville Police Department, who joined that, who went there after the Charlottesville the fallout from that 2017 Unite the Right rally, which seems like 100 years ago now. What about diversity? How much does that make a difference? Are there any examples out there that you can share?
I mean, I think that it makes a difference, but it is not a cure-all. So, you know, we see over and over again that sometimes excessive use of force is done by Black officers, and that's for a lot of complicated reasons. But, you know, officers, regardless of their race, can share the same implicit biases. You don't have to be white to have absorbed the cultural message that we've all gotten for generations, that basically otherizes Black people, and in fact frames them very deliberately as violent and criminal. And so, you know, you're not immune to that if you're Black. So there's that. Now, if you look at, for example, the Capitol riot, the Capitol Police Force has had longstanding complaints about a lack of diversity at the top. And there you could see, and some members of the force have told me, you know, if we had been sitting there, we could have said, yes, this is a real threat. Like if Black people had been sitting at that table, they could have said, yes, this is a real threat. There's a history behind it. We should take this seriously. So you can see how diversity can contribute to like the way you perceive what a threat is or isn't in an event like that. And in that case, one officer who worked there for decades said, you know, when Farrakhan would come to Capitol Hill, they would treat him as an extreme threat and there was no reason for it. So, you know, he would get upset about that. So I think you have that. I mean, there are many, many talented Black police chiefs that are quite accomplished and that are reform. Some of them are reform minded, some of them aren't. So again, it's not, you know, it's not a silver bullet.
What does reform even mean? Reform
such
what?
A great question. Well, I think fundamentally, different chiefs will have different answers to this, but I think what they are trying to do a lot of the time is break down the perception of we're at war with our own populace, that that the citizenry is actually the enemy and should be perceived as a threat. I think that's some of it. I think some of it is, what's your use of, it goes to training, what's your use of force continuum? How are you training people to respond? It goes to de-escalate. I mean, if you've ever had an interaction with a police officer, it can come to just procedural justice, what they call procedural justice. So if you've ever had a conversation where you said, hey, what's going on? Why are you blocking the street? And the officer said, move along. You know, it's how they treat the citizenry's right to know what's happening in their own neighborhoods. It can be as simple as that. Mm-hmm. It can mean a lot. It can mean like what you saw in the George Floyd case was officers failing to speak up when they saw something that they were uncomfortable with going on. And so there's all kinds of training going on now to encourage officers to speak up and to valorize that actually. So there's all kinds of aspects. It's a good question.
Well, Shaila Dewan, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Sure.
That's Shaila Dewan. She is a New York Times national criminal justice reporter and editor, and she has been covering this musical chairs of police chiefs around the country, which Columbus is part of, as it's in a search for a new chief of police that they promise will come from outside the force. We'll continue our conversation on this, so stay with us. If you have a question or comment, what do you think? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What should reform look like? This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Slave patrols first began in 1704 in South Carolina and spread throughout the 13 colonies. Squadrons of white volunteers used vigilante tactics to quell uprisings and catch runaway slaves. They forcefully entered homes based on suspicions and meted out violent punishment as they saw fit. And from those beginnings, the nation's cities have wrought what we now call police departments. Our nation's cities are now at a stage of reckoning, looking everywhere for reform-minded leaders to break the cycle. The city of Columbus has embarked on a second nationwide search for a chief of police. This time, Mayor Ginther has promised that they will hire from outside the division. Police Chief Rochelle Brackney has led the Charlottesville Police Department since 2018, following fallout from the 2017 Unite the Right rally. Chief Brackney is an expert in harm reduction, procedural and restorative justice, and community police relations. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great seeing you as always.
In August 2017, all eyes were on Charlottesville, Virginia, where white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and counter-protesters clashed. You were hired from outside the department to be the chief of police. What was the experience like to walk into that?
So as you can imagine, when you're walking into an organization that has not just national but international prominence based on the events that occurred here. Globally, everyone was paying attention to what was occurring, more specifically because we were about to have the marking of the events, the first anniversary of the events of 2017. Okay. I arrived 6 weeks before that anniversary. We were in legal negotiations still with the original organizer as to whether he could have a second event here as well. And in addition to all of those things, we were at high levels of alert, understanding that individuals who wanted to continue to make a name for themselves or possibly make a name for themselves could do it at that second event. We were also seeing a shift across the nation in supremacy and white identity politics and being emboldened. And we sit at the epicenter of what has been known as the summer of hate here, and where there was this tension over heritage versus hate with Confederate statues and flags and things of that nature. And I'm coming into a department in which the chanting was cops and Klan go hand in hand. As a multicultural female who identifies as Black, to take over the head of an agency in which the community believed that the police department was complicit in the actions that had occurred the previous year.
Lots of people say the system of policing is broken, and others say it was never right to begin with because of its racist roots.
So you're absolutely correct. I often say it's very difficult to talk about reform or reconstruction of a system that is inherently flawed, a system that was built not just on racism, but on supremacy, very different ideas and institutional supremacy that has built in systemic and systematic ways in which we other individuals, in which we dominate individuals. You talked briefly about the beginnings of slave patrols as being the birthplace of modern day policing, although the police community would like to think it was out of London and Sir Robert Peel. It has this very noble ring to it. But we need to first recognize what system we were built on before we can even come to any sort of reckoning or rectifying of the system that we currently operate or call the policing institution in the United States of America.
Because I couldn't think of anything different than what we think of as the English police officer. They don't call them that. They may carry firearms now, but historically it was the billy club. It wasn't as militarized as it feels like the U.S. police forces are.
And Anne, you're dating both of us by using the term billy club.
I know.
I even understand it or remember it is scary. But, you know, that when you hear billy club, it rings particularly as a frightening tool in Black communities,
right,
who were often at the receiving end of that violence. But you're exactly right. The point is that they were not heavily armed, that there was this interaction in communities in which they were part of the community, right? They were embedded in as part of the fabric of policing, built on the concept, which is an interesting concept, is that police officers in London are being paid to do what they say society should be doing as a whole, policing ourselves, that this is just a formalized structure in which we are giving over moral and authentic authority to a group of persons to police society.
When you walk into a situation like Charlottesville and they want you to reform something, how does that even start?
I came right out and said it can't be reformed. You cannot reform this system. This system has to be completely dismantled. I talk about a lot when we think about the words like reimagining a just or reimagining a criminal justice system, that would have called for imagining that it was just in some ways, right? This is a imagining concept versus a reimagining concept. That is the only way we're going to be able to do this, in which we look at culture as well as systems, right? Because they don't operate independently of each other and they actually reinforce each other. The systems that are currently in place enforce and reinforce the current policing culture, and the current policing culture often forms and informs the business systems, structures, legislatures, laws in which they currently operate under. So there is no reformation. Again, I say that there has to be a reckoning, but more importantly, a rectifying. We cannot sit in a reimagining. We have to completely rectify and create a new system altogether.
And is that why they hired you in Charlottesville? Is that what you're about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is part of it. I think as in a lot of policing agencies across the nation, when we're there attempting to change the face of policing, right, where they're looking for more minorities and women to lead agencies who might then have the ability to influence the agency and penetrate down into the agency. But it is not a panacea when you just put someone of color in that seat. Yes, that's why I was brought in, to look at the entire system and look at it through a lens of justice and equity, and where I can dismantle. I have been completely dismantling the systems, and that doesn't come with, that's not an easy proposition. People aren't really sure what they want when they're asking for reform. So you're negotiating through and with individuals about how they see a just system working, and then still having to operate with a public safety mindset.
In my earlier conversation with the New York Times reporter, I talked about a former public safety director in Indianapolis, who is also a former chief of police in Spokane, Washington. And he said that in his case, the rank and file welcomed reform, but that the top brass in the department opposed him. What can you talk about what your experience has been on that score?
So it's a combination of both, right? There are people who are very comfortable operating in the system that they're in. And when they're being held to account, and there is a different type of transparency, legitimacy, and accountability that is being called for by someone who, one, is a minority within the profession, right? Women are minorities within the profession. Less than, I think it's 3%, are female. So can you imagine then those in chief's positions and those of color or who identify as being of color? It is really a challenge. And then I come from the North. So I'm a damn Yankee down here in Virginia. Someone recently called me a carpetbagger. I hadn't heard that term since probably sixth grade social studies or history. So there's those aspects that come with it. Add to it that I'm an academic. I've come from a large city like Pittsburgh, where it is a very metropolitan community, where there are these opportunities for exposures and experiences that are very limited in a place like Charlottesville, because it is often surrounded by very rural areas. It sits as a small city. It feels larger based on its reputation, but it's only 49,000 individuals here. So the opportunities beyond the university for world life and global experiences for even the police officers of the rank and file, it can be very insular. So new ideas are often labeled as leftist, liberal, progressive, and then with all of the taglines that that get pushback that go along with that. So it's extremely challenging. I think we've made progress, kicking and screaming, but I also say that we create a community and a culture here that if you're not vision or value aligned, you're not comfortable working in this agency. You will find a place that ascribes to your values. And Charlottesville is not that place for officers who are not interested in restorative practices, procedural justice, and what a just Seville looks like, as we say here.
I'm wondering about how community fits into those conversations and into that value system. Your city, Charlottesville, and Columbus have both established civilian review boards. Columbus is actually in the process of putting all those pieces together and writing the rules, but it's not up and running yet. But what has your experience been on that relationship and how that works?
So I came from Pittsburgh, where they had one of the first civilian review boards that I knew of in 1997. It was established under a consent decree with the Department of Justice, right? So a lot of these civilian review boards come out of referendums from the voting public who say, we want this, we want civilian oversight, or they'll come out of the Department of Justice out of the 1994 Uniform Crime Bill, in which they were for the first time investigating departments for patterns and practices of discrimination, misconduct. Chicago, Seattle, a lot of places, Pittsburgh, New Orleans, have these Baltimore type of civilian oversight boards. Charlottesville's is an outgrowth of the Unite the Right rally events that occurred here. It has had a very rocky start. And I think the part of the reason is because I don't think it was really informed as to what its mission would be, or there was any agreed upon what does oversight look like and what are you attempting to gain with oversight. And what I mean by that is being able to inform and have input on policies. Those things I'm all for. I post our policies and have posted our policies online since January of 2020 for the public to see, including the Civilian Review Board. And to date, I've had one recommendation as to changing any of our policies. So there is opportunity for insight, but I don't know if individuals know or feel like they can have part of that or be part of those conversations. The Civilian Review Board is still up and running and trying to establish processes here for even how to take a complaint in or how to have a hearing or review. So it's still a very growing relationship. It's a growing relationship. And more importantly, though, Virginia legislators have mandated that civilian review boards now can be formed across the state with enabling legislature, I mean, enabling powers that will give them the authority if the localities agree to full oversight of our policies, binding arbitration, including our binding discipline up to termination, mm-hmm. with the exception of the chief's position. So when these kinds of sweeping legislatures come about, that means the public has had some say in it.
You know, for considering what we're going through as a nation right now, and I earlier kind of referred or likened this musical chairs of police chiefs to what a lot of school districts go through with superintendents, which we've all watched that same thing going on. I know that you were recently a finalist for the top job in Dallas. What about this moving around thing? What is your sense about it and your expectations for how long this is going to go on?
So this is really great opportunity times to get talent, to highlight talent, to support talent for those individuals who've been doing the work of literally dismantling a system, you know, the criminal legal system, starting with in policing. The police reformers that you hear out there, those persons who have been cutting edge, progressive in their thoughts, they're being highly sought after. So it's very competitive. But what we're also finding out is there is a huge exodus in these very progressive policing chiefs, because once they get there, they're often finding out that they're not supported, fully supported from the persons even who are hiring them. Mm. They're not given the resources nor the autonomy to make the changes. And they're often, and I hate to use this pun, handcuffed about what they can and cannot do. They'll often try to blame it on unions. But what I've also said is that handcuffing comes from political appointees, because the mayors, the city managers, et cetera, they're the ones who sign off on these contracts for the unions. So they're invested in getting that union support, negotiating this contract. And then this chief is left trying to balance these political landscapes as well as these very these systems landscapes. So more and more, you're finding that these talented chiefs are not willing to risk their reputations any longer, or their efforts. They're going into private industry. They're consulting now. They're being able to influence it in that way. And you're losing a large amount of talent because the systems don't support them overall, right? They really are fighting a lot of fronts. They're fighting the possible departments that don't want to change. They're fighting the communities who want change right now. And if they don't get it within a certain time frame, the person they fire is the coach, right? Just like we do in football. There are going to be a lot of coaches fired this season after the football season and the Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. They fire the police chiefs, but don't leave them in place long enough, nor with the resources, or allow them to recruit the talent to support their mission. And they're not even allowed to bring their own teams in or build teams.
Right. And does that affect... Okay, you just said, I mean, the talent is unwilling to take those risks now, less willing to go in for just 2 years. I mean, that former public safety director from Indianapolis and said he didn't expect to last long, that they brought him in to shock the system, that was the tactic.
Yeah, and that's a poor tactic to sacrifice somebody for that. Here's what you're fighting. Not only are you fighting a system, and this is, we talk a lot about culture, and culture is important, but more and more you're finding out, even in businesses, culture is influenced by the systems and the practices, right? The police department culture is one of blue socialization, right? We bring people in, we socialize them into the blue community. And then those fundamental, reworking those fundamental practices become much more difficult, because the culture is one in which it's very insular. It is very much, I don't care what anyone says, an us versus them mentality. Every bit of the training puts you at odds, that you have to survive, that you have to go home every day, that you're likely to die out there. And when that's the continuum reinforcing of the message, it is really hard to shock a system that can overcome, I might die every day, or I might be assassinated, right? It's one of the only professions that I know of where people are intentionally killed because of the profession. Mm-hmm. So there's no shocking a system under that one. In fact, you set the system up for failure and you send it into one of even more chaos where people are going to create their own rules.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and that is Charlottesville Police Chief Rochelle Brackney. She has led the department since 2018. She's an expert in harm reduction, procedural and restorative justice, and community police relations. We're going to keep her, and we're going to continue our conversation with a member of the community organization or group that advised on the last hiring of a police chief. And we're also going to hear from a consultant who consults with cities on hiring police chiefs. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR. PR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. 36 people applied in 2019 when the city of Columbus conducted a nationwide search for a new police chief. It marked the first time the city looked outside for a replacement, and it took arbitration with the Fraternal Order of Police to move forward on that front. A search committee made up of community members participated in the process, but Mayor Andrew Ginther promoted Deputy Police Chief Thomas Quinlan. Several members of the search committee publicly complained that the other frontrunner, Perry Tarrant of the Seattle Police, complained when he didn't get the job. About a year later, Quinlan has been demoted and the city has embarked on its second nationwide search for his replacement. This time, the mayor has promised they will hire from outside the force. Still with us is Chief Rochelle Brackney of the Charlottesville, Virginia Police Force. Chuck Wexler is the executive director of the Police Executive Research Forum in Washington, D.C., where he helps large cities find chiefs of police. He is not involved in the Columbus job search. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be with you, Ann.
And
say hello to the chief. I know Chief
Brackney. Hey, Chuck. I hit you in the chat versus your text messages.
Oh, okay.
And the Reverend Jeffrey P. Key is the pastor at New Faith Baptist Church of Columbus, I believe. And you were a member of the New Faith Baptist Church of Christ. Sorry about that. And he was a member of the 2019 search committee for a new police chief. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for welcoming me. And it's good to be here.
So tell me, how did the community, the committee, I guess, the committee that you were on, search committee, how did it participate? What role did you play?
Well, the process was to interview different candidates that were interested in the position, the chief position. And we could have had a community forum for three or four, but it narrowed down. It was just two. It ended up being Thomas Quinlan and also, again, the person, Perry Tarrant.
Well, how did you get there? I mean, what was the process like?
It was really like a roundtable discussion of those of us who were part of the advisory commission to the mayor to appoint the police chief. And we openly discussed the different candidates. And my main concern, I was probably one of few to my recall that really did not want someone internally. And I certainly did not vote for Thomas Quinlan. And I don't want to go on record saying I was the only one, but I certainly remember being out there where I was clearly stating that I didn't think this was good for our community.
And why do you think bringing in somebody from the outside is going to achieve anything differently?
Well, I think there is a culture of racism and discrimination that has been a part of the culture of Columbus policing for a very long period of time. And many times when you have that camaraderie with your colleagues and you are all blue and you're part of that fraternity and you are connected and have allegiance to alliances and institutions, it's difficult to come in and be objective and to be able to do what's right for everyone.
Chuck Wexler, what do you make of this trend toward outsiders coming in to change things up in police forces across the country?
Well, you know, there's 18,000 police departments in the country. Most of them are small agencies, and most of them actually select from within, probably 80%. It's not anything new taking someone from outside. Sometimes someone from outside can come in and change things. Sometimes they fail. Sometimes you can get someone from inside who has been overlooked, and if they have the right stuff, they can do very well. So I wouldn't say necessarily, the solution is always going outside. The solution is, as the chief had mentioned, is getting someone who, you know, has the right stuff, might be a visionary, might have been trapped in their own organization and needs to be identified. I've seen that happen, as well as bringing people inside from outside to come in. That very often, when we get asked to help a city, and people inevitably say, should they come from inside or outside? And we say, where is the city now? Where does the city want to go? Do they have the right leadership in place? If a city doesn't really necessarily have major issues, it might make sense to develop people in the organization to come in. But if a city's really in trouble and has a bunch of issues, then sometimes going outside. We just did Louisville, Kentucky. And the police chief there came from Atlanta. And some people said, how could you pick police chief from Atlanta? She had faced so many issues there. Well, turns out that she had done a very good job in Atlanta. And she is a reformer. And so, you know, every organization, every culture is different. Today people are looking for change. They're looking for something, you know, different. We're not necessarily sure what that is. When people say we want to reimagine police, it depends on who you ask. But I think change is in the air.
And what about having community search committees or communities? Communities. Search groups involved?
Oh, I think that's important. In Louisville, for example, they had a committee made up of citizens who were engaged. One of the challenges you have in Ohio is you have this issue of disclosure. And if you notice in the last chief selection, the people who applied, all their names appeared in the paper. When that happens in the city, it discourages people, like take Dr. Brackney, for example. She is a police chief now in one city. If she decided she wanted to be a police chief in another city, she'd have to make a decision, because if that was disclosed, that might hurt her in her present job. So you're not going to get her necessarily in some other cities because she risks hurting her career. That's the situation you have in Columbus. You have people who apply, know that their name will be disclosed, and it discourages some candidates. We just were involved in Philadelphia and Baltimore as well. And there we were able to conduct the process in which we got a lot of citizen input, but ultimately we could keep the confidentiality of candidates. And that's important to get the best candidates. There's a real trade-off there. Columbus really can't do that now. Ohio cities really can't do that. And also, if you come from outside and you come into Columbus, you have to go through a certification process. It's like being a police officer all over again. And for someone, you know, take Dr. Brackney, for example. If she were to come into Columbus, she would have to be virtually a police officer for 4 months. She would to be certified. I'm not sure she's willing to do that, right?
And you're exactly right. The reason Dallas was okay is my name was not released until I was a finalist. And then that gave me time to inform my city manager and our council and my staff that I was in this process. Releasing it anytime sooner would have done a lot of damage. And as a matter of fact, I had to scramble when I found out they were releasing it earlier than I had originally intended for that. So Chuck is exactly correct about the pros and the cons, and also the importance of community engagement in each and every one of those, because as I started from the beginning and saying, it's the community who gives us our authority, both our formal and our moral authority. And if they're not behind that chief, the likelihood of success is almost zero. Because they're fighting too many systems. They're trying to manage too many competing priorities.
What about that, Reverend Key? I think that both those requirements that Chuck Wexler just mentioned, the requiring applicants to attend the Ohio Peace Officer training grounds, and then also, transparency. Yeah,
that was lifted to us as well, that was a major concern. And those who decided to interview anyhow, they were aware of that. I want to make something real clear. I became a part of the advisory commission to the mayor because the religious community, there was a major internal strife going on within the police department. So I came in as a result of being a voice for three entities on behalf of those officers who are Black and brown in the Columbus Police Department that came to the churches for a prophetic voice, because there was so much internal discrimination going on that they said, can you please, assist us, because we're dealing with retaliation, we're dealing with internal discrimination. So about 60 clergy sent a letter to the mayor sort of demanding or requesting that I would represent the religious community at large, represent those who were internally discriminated against within the police department, and to represent my own community. So I came in as a result of the fact that what was going on in terms of leadership inside the police department was what was defined as status quo, and it was a culture problem, and we wanted to dismantle that and bring a greater sense of equality in. So there was really major internal strife. We have a police department over 1,900, and only 180 something officers are people of color. So There's a real issue in terms of diversity, in terms of blatant, overt discrimination and racism. And that was a concern about the disclosure piece in terms of the search process.
We only have time for one more question. And Chuck Wexler, I'll turn to you for this. What about this rapid turnover of police chiefs around the country? Chief Brackney said that it's getting to be a turnoff. I mean, people would just rather they can go into other professions now once they achieve a certain level. Are we draining the swamp of candidates?
Yikes.
Sorry about that.
We don't like to talk about draining the swamp here in Washington, D.C. We had 4 years of that, and we don't want another day of that. I've been doing this for a while, and I think this is a tough business. Every police chief in this country, unfortunately, is one bad car stop away from losing their job. On the other hand, there's a tremendous opportunity out there for people who want to make a difference. And I can tell you, Chief Brackney is one of them. There are people that, it's interesting what's going on right now. There's two types of people out there. One type who's so frustrated they want to get out of the business, and the other type who are on the bench and they want to come in.
Okay.
And when you're doing that circle, that means...
Running out of time. And I want to say thank you to Chuck Wexler. I appreciate your time today. Chuck Wexler is Executive Director of the Police Executive Research Forum in Washington, D.C. Also, Dr. Reverend Jeffrey P. Key, Pastor of the New Faith Baptist Church of Christ. Thanks for your time today. And Police Chief Rochelle Brackney of the Charlottesville Police Department. Thanks to you as well. I appreciate all your time today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.